Blog Talk Radio.
Well, where are we at? What's going on here? What? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Saturday, high noon. Independence Holiday, 2010. My God, I just found out where I was at. I'm in Kansas. Holy crap, I'm in Kansas. Fred Phelps is just 30 miles down the road. God, they breed. They breed. They do breed. Well, Brother Matthew's at the switchboard running it. Matthew Delvin, my dear brother. Yes, it's a balmy day here in North Jefferson County, Kansas. I'm your host, Mike Cadell. Welcome to special Independence Holiday edition of Radio Free Kansas. This is going to be some fun. Yeah, we have some gossip. We've got all kinds of stuff to play for you. Music. Jim Hightower. Somewhere. Hightower sort of lurks. They're one of our country's greatest populace. He just pops up. And then we have great selections from our switchboard. All for the 4th. Fourth of July, dedicated to Independence Day. Oh my goodness. Yep. Also coming up, first up, folks, so you don't have to wait too long, the surprise announcement by Senator Chris Steiniger, 6th District, Democrat, near Wyandotte, Johnson County, Northeast Kansas. Senator Chris Steiniger is on the road. That's right, he's on the road campaigning after having a political hit job. A political hit job done by on him, upon him, to him, by members of his own party, the Democrats. Lazy liberals and comfortable conservatives, beware, you buck-toothed pals, you podunk proletarians, you whiskey-swilling, gun-slinging rednecks, beware. Here comes Radio Free Kansas. We're on it. Brother Matthew, pick out some music for us. Let's get her going with a swing. That's right, folks. We've got something to do. Hope you enjoy this show the next 2 hours. Steiniger, 9th District Representative, Kansas State Legislature, Bill Otto. And last but not least, oh no, our featured conversation with Kevin Zeese of ProsperityAgenda.us. Look it up now. Testified in the White House before the National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. We've got a great program ahead. I'm telling you, hang out. Listen to some local music talent. We'll play some Eddie Glenn, Frank Proffitt. They're all coming your way in the next 2 hours of Radio Free Kansas out here where the weather's just starting to turn hot. Amidst the corn. We're going to do a memorial for Robert Byrd, Senator Robert Byrd, who died this week at the age of 92. I'll talk about Senator Byrd later in the show. This is a great man. Great man, that's for sure. Lied and stayed at the Senate Dias for a day, not more than a day. Senator Byrd wouldn't want any more than that. Ready for some music, Brother Matthew? Play some music. We're hanging out. Now let's get to Senator Chris Steiniger. Thank you.
guess it's just too late for that. There's not much left to hold on to. These days my heart's better than broken, not as good as new.
That was Eddie Glenn. Now we're going to play some Goo Goo Dolls, and then we'll go into the Chris Steinecker interview. Go. That was the Goo Goo Dolls. Anybody wanting to call in, you can call in at 646-716-8652. We're going to roll an interview with
Chris Steinecker here. It's a two-part interview. This is the first part.
Listeners, you heard about it on the your email, if not, or you saw it on the flyer. That's right. We've got Senator Chris Steinecker, state legislator. He's running for Secretary of State. He's on the phone on the other end, and yeah, and we're going to discuss his announcement that I was leading you into. Hello, Chris Steinecker.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Fine. It's a wonderful day. It's Thursday, and you're traveling on your campaign today.
Indeed. Greetings from the road. I'm cruising down the highway, and I can talk and drive at the same time. Just not talking, just not driving text.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They go illegal now.
Well, you know, where were you going to? Where have you been?
Been in Kansas City and Leavenworth and Lawrence already today, and I'm heading south towards Winfield and Wichita.
Great. Who are you seeing in Winfield?
The Cali County Democrats are having a meeting tonight, and I will be there.
Hey, what kind of sentiment are you feeling from the people you're meeting out there on the campaign trail, brother?
Well, a lot of people, the good news is the Steinecker name is a very well-known old, been around a long time, and a lot of people know the name and like it and respect it. And, I've been there, and my dad before me is a reliable public servant. So.
That's right. Can you still hear me? Yes, we were back on the phone again with Senator Chris Steinecker, asking. Tell us about the people you're meeting and what their attitudes are.
Well, like I said, people recognize Steinecker name. It's a very well-known old brand here in Kansas, and they recognize the name of a lot of old family friends out all over every city. I've got people out there that know me or knew my dad or my family members, and it's great to have a network of supporters. And I think ultimately that's going to help me get elected. People recognize this pastor as somebody who's been around a while and been reliable and good public servants.
Yeah. Well, wait.
I guess,
go ahead.
But, you know, really, the other thing is, you know, people recognize that I tell them that here's the four things that I bring to the table as a candidate. One, I've been in the legislature 14 years, and I've toured all over our state, and I sure as heck know about the different regions of our state and the way we all make money, our economy, and I know the different peoples around our state. We're all, you know, we have East Kansas, West Kansas, Southeast, Northwest. We're all a little bit different. We're all the same, but we're all different, and I know the regional differences of our state. Second, I've been a small business guy. When you're a small business person, you understand how to analyze and take risks, and you learn how to live within a budget, and you learn a lot about marketing and customer friendliness. Number three, pretty well known. I've built up the reputation of being a creative, independent-minded guy. And this is the year, American voters, that they're rejecting people who are too closely tied to one party or the other. And what the people are, the voters are looking for is candidates who are independent-minded and represent people and not parties or big business. And I think the fourth thing I think to bring to the table is I've got, in addition to a lot of Democrats knowing the name, there's a lot of moderate Republicans and independent voters. And in Kansas, if you're a Democrat, you got to have buy-in and acceptability from moderate Republicans and independent voters. And I know I have that. So I think that's ultimately what makes me a better candidate than the others, and it helps me to win.
Well, I'm really excited now. So I'm taking from the way you're talking, you're going to run to the August 3rd primary, and you're not going to follow Minority Whip Leader Anthony Helmsley's advice.
I'm in all the way. You know, I've been planning on this for a couple of years, and I've been working hard for several years. A lot of people know that, to run for an office here in 2010, and I'm in it all the way.
Excellent. That's good to hear. A good run. What's your opinion of the August 3rd primary of the Kansas Democratic Party announcing that unaffiliated or independent voters can come into their, inviting them into the polling booth?
I think it's good. I've always been more of a big tent guy. I think the Democrats have always been the party that have a little open minds. And even though our party has some closed-minded people, too, but by and large, it's much more of an open inclusive political party, and I think allowing independent voters in is a good idea.
Excellent. And you're going to Winfield today? What are your plans over the holiday? The listeners will be hearing this on Saturday.
I've got a parade on Saturday and a couple other events on Saturday, then I have family members coming in Saturday night. Sunday, quite frankly, I'm going to take the day off the main trail and spend it with my family.
Sure. Well, do you know what parade you'll be appearing at?
We're going to be in a parade in Johnson County.
Okay. All right. The contact information for your website is?
Yep. It's Steininger for Kansas, www.steinigerforkansas. The campaign office is in Merriam, and that number is 913-403-8084.
Excellent.
If your listeners want to help out, we'd love to have you.
That's right. And thank you for coming on Radio Free Kansas on this Independence Holiday program.
Happy holidays to you. Enjoy the weekend.
You too, Senator Chris. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on the bumpy road to love. Still I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you've changed my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away.
Check it out. Brother Matthew's running the board. We'll have some music or Bill Otto coming up next. Talking about, pay attention to who he says, much money it'll take to buy the state of Kansas. How much money do you have, listeners? Do you have a lot of money? Maybe you could buy the, pick your party, Democrat, Republican. Maybe you could buy it. Just buy a political party. Boss Hog. Yeah, Boss Hog that. Come on, do it. Brother Matthew, play something for us, would you please? Listeners, this is a special treat here on Independence Holiday coming up here. We got the Independence Day tomorrow, and I'm dating this. I shouldn't do it because I'd like to play this over and over. We've got a gem of a politician, Representative Bill Otto from Leroy, Kansas, my hometown. I'm proud to say. Bill Otto's on the other end of the phone, and I just want to – you got a message for our listeners this Independence Day, brother?
Yes, I have. It's like be alert of what's going on, inform voters, because there are forces in Kansas that are trying to hijack.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to give an example. I represent parts of Franklin County and Allen County. Franklin County, the Tea Party movement, is a grassroots, honest to God, really bunch of people that are aggravated. They don't like big government. They don't like spending, et cetera, et cetera. When you go to one of theirs, it's like I've been invited to talk, and you have to buy your own hot dogs. You have to buy your own drinks, and they're soliciting all the contributions they can get.
Uh-huh.
You go to Allen County, and you can get free hot dogs, free drinks. I'm not allowed to speak. And you can see that somebody is paying some bills. And the somebody is pretty clear as you come out with some of these ratings like the Kansas for Prosperity. When the chairman of the tax committee, and people need to realize in the state of Kansas, the speaker is dictator. I mean, you get the speaker gets the committee chairs do what is bidding or else. And nothing was said in Republican caucus. Nothing was said. He goes down and he proposes a floor amendment on a tax bill to eliminate all corporate income tax in the state of Kansas.
What? No kidding.
No kidding. And that's one of the key rating votes that they gave. And people need to realize that, you know, if we dug the hole deeper, you're in the hole and you dig it deeper, it's another one of those special tax deals. And if you give one group a break, then everybody else has to pick up the tab.
Right. Usually there's people on the muddy end of the stick, the people at work, the ones on the bottom, don't you think, or the middle?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things where I don't think any of us had voted for that 1 cent tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to do that.
Right, right.
And it did protect the people that I want anybody that's in that, the lower income people.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply for a rebate on your tax return, and you can get some of your money back. But for the middle class, the average middle class people, where husband and wife, they're both working their butts off, you know, you come down, this was a 1% increase, because you're spending every penny that you make to get by, and if you're spending all your money, it's a 1% increase.
Uh-huh.
But so nobody liked it, you know. But we had to fund essential services. I mean, I was fearful of losing the rest homes, a couple of hospitals in my district, Meals on Wheels online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to get that Medicare. There's just a lot of things we had to do. But that's just a little example that you need to realize that there are some powerful interests. The Chamber of Commerce, the Republican leadership in the House, they are owned by some pretty powerful people.
Well, you know, and you've been speaking to some of these Tea Party gatherings, and you're finding out that some of them are being they're sort of controlling the agendas, huh? They're not.
Yeah, look, Allen County is on that tax.
Yeah.
That tax vote, that's where my opponent comes in. It's all about tax. You look at, but you look at the crowd, the people, most of the people at these tea parties are, you know, they're libertarians.
Right.
And they are, in last session, it's like the people didn't care. I mean, I voted no on a whole bunch of stuff. Smoking ban. I voted no on mandatory seat belts. I voted no on making all the child care inspected in the state of Kansas. And so-called conservatives were in support of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, if you're really about conservative values in government, it's like, why are people voting for these things? And it's all about taxes. It's all about people who pay the bills, and the people who pay the bills for politicians have a lot of money. A good example was Anthony Hensley had a good idea. Anthony and I disagree on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
He came out with wanting to have income tax for people making over $250,000. And I was really looking forward to at least a floor amendment or something to try to fight that. Well, he never even tried running it. Well, it's because I am afraid both parties, people making over $250,000, are generally the political contributors.
They're the ones that are running the show on both parties, you think, huh?
Both parties.
Yeah.
Both parties. It's a shame. And it's like, I just want to say, people, it's like, I know Chris Steininger, and although I'm Senator Smith's my man, he's my senator, and for the Democrats, it's like, I really honestly say Chris Steininger is a good man.
You're referring to this hit job. I call it a hit job that Hensley did on Steininger's pre-primary campaign. That's the thing that was a low blow to, I think, many people who were just wanting to see the primary work its course. You know.
Well, you have to realize too that Chris Steininger ran against Hensley for minority leader.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's payback time.
Oh. Well, can you give us a little bit on your side of the aisle? What are there hit jobs being done? Are they so quiet we don't know about it? And
there's the Chamber of Commerce has put 10 of us that voted for the tax increase on the hit list, and they're targeting us for defeat in primaries and trying to get actually without recruiting. Plus, former Speaker Melvin Neufeld that voted against the tax increase, but they are still targeting because they're fearful that this next election, if he runs for Speaker again, would go back the other way.
Huh.
And,
interesting.
With Melvin or not, he's not for sale.
Well, well, that's something good to hear about Melvin, Representative Melvin. I appreciate that, hearing that too. By the way, I've been mean to the guy enough over the coal plants that I've called a temporary truce on the gentleman. But that's good to hear. Well, you know, I'm wondering about that because don't you feel that there are exemptions? There's many, many exemptions. Tax exemptions that some surely should be considered, I think, you know, and I just, my pet one, a former newspaper publisher was, I happen to know at campaign time is always great because you get a lot of campaign ads in your local newspaper, your little county newspapers, and there's a lot of money crosses hands on advertisers, there's no taxes on the transactions. I know that won't happen. I understand it happens in Pennsylvania, but not here.
I wish it would happen because it's like one time I had a guy that had a bill. He had a great idea. He was saying, let's only publish once for public entities, like if you're going to have the budget and like that. Let's only just publish them once in the newspaper and let's put them online. And so I put that bill out there, and I had a visit from, my newspapers and stuff, and I have barely started to recover from that. it's like the old expression, don't argue with the men that they're eating by the barrel.
That's right. Well, that's one of the exemptions that I, as a guy who formerly owned barrels of ink, now I just have coffee cans of ink. I'll tell you right now, that is a big exemption that is really not that big a deal. Even a 1 cent, if you think of broadcast media, not just print media, but all the campaigns, ads, listeners, you see, those are untaxed materials. Of course, the publisher pays taxes, but I'm wondering how many exemptions the publisher, the broadcaster, the network has, where they're escaping taxes. And they're big money operations, and they should be, on the newspaper. I think I pay a penny for my 75-cent a week county newspaper here in Jefferson County, but that's over that's over the counter when I buy it. You know, they charge me a tax. I don't know where it goes, but I do think that's just one. But there's other. Can you, off the top of your head, come up with exemptions and other industries and things that were?
We have the exemptions are so silly. It's like. If you're like there's one or two Johnson County like Rotary clubs that are named in statute that have projects that are tax exempt, but if you're out here in the Iola Rotary and you're on the project, you got to pay taxes on it.
Weird.
And, yeah, it's like whoever's ox is getting gored, and it says I've been there about every time that we bring it up. Instead of, at least this time we didn't add any more exemptions, but
we didn't add anymore. That's, I guess, that would be a little contrary to public opinion right now, I think. But
one of the reasons I was a big Huckabee person is that flat tax. If we had, because our codes, we generally just line up with federal code. Well, if we basically had a national sales tax, we would make, number one, all this internet sales and all this stuff, we would get, I'd say it almost balanced the budget just right there.
Uh-huh.
We would probably line up in these exemptions. We could probably cut our taxes in half if we didn't have all the exemptions.
Yeah. I just feel like that no matter what we do, even a flat tax at the corporations, which have, after Citizens, the Supreme Court's ruling with Citizens United, where they can pour all their money, corporations into political campaigns. I just feel that that's just an example of why the 10% flat tax won't work, because there'll be too many snakes getting out of it, or there'll be exemptions or something written into the law that there won't be a flat tax for the people that really should be paying that amount. But where do you think we're going? First, are you running? You're running opposed in your district. Who is it, and what do you think? Where do you think the state legislature will be going next year? I hope you'll be gracing the halls of the state capitol then too. So.
Well, I hesitate to use, but I would say thank you to people that are my philosophical. It's going to be a tough year. We're still going to have fun things. The stimulus package is going to go away. We have got to get funded our schools. We're either going to do it before the court rules or after. It's like we made a deal. It's like we had a base, and it's like stick to your deal. I mean, that's the way it is. If we lose, if the Chamber of Commerce and some of those, their idea is cut taxes. And
for them.
and services could be curtailed, more layoffs of state employees. we could really, the snowball can roll downhill pretty fast.
Wow. Well, where are we? How are we standing in your campaign down there in your district? And are you are any upcoming appearances you'd like to know? I'll be broadcasting this Saturday.
Well, I always like to plug parades.
We're sure.
We have in Princeton at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a parade, and at Westphalia at 7 o'clock. There's going to be a parade, and I will be in both of them. And coming up the 10th. Going to be Richmond Fair, and that's always a great time, and parade's at 6, and I will be there. And Ottawa is having a forum at the commission room in the annex at 7 p.m. on the 13th
okay.
of July.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, that's the only one. This is with the August primary at 3rd. People just need to be, as I go around, I remind people, because there's like a lot of people say, well, I'm a Democrat. And I say, well, you got Steininger and Briggs.
Mm-hmm. And then,
you know, it's like people, primaries are important. You can look at what happened in Utah,
mm-hmm.
to where I don't think anybody is very pleased with Harry Reid, but by the same token, now that you look at your opponent, it's
yeah,
you know, primaries are important.
Well, with that, the last question, you know, the Kansas Democratic Party, who I have significant differences with, but I agree with some of their stuff, some of their candidates, in particular some candidates, but they're opening up the primary voting booths on August 3rd to unaffiliated people like me, and actually the largest body of voters in the state of Kansas. The unaffiliated. I'm, you know, going to vote in the Democratic primary on August 3rd. Do you think, what possibility is there that the Kansas Republican Party will come down off its toadstool and open up the primary, their primaries, to unaffiliated voters?
Well, there's none this election. They're just not going to. I'm on the government committee, and that's something I would really like to have, to where it's, and where my idea is, if you're a registered voter, you walk up and you say, I want a Republican ballot or a Democrat ballot.
Mm, at the primary. Right, I got you.
And right now, even if you're an independent,
mm-hmm.
if you're an independent, you can walk up and you can ask for a Democrat ballot. Now, people need to realize when they do that, they become a Democrat until they go back and re-register as an independent.
Really? Now, people don't realize that. I didn't know that.
Yep.
They enter you as a registered Democrat even though you're entering the poll.
If you vote in the primary, you need to go be sure that you're back independent. Because my dad is that way, and it's like he's my dad became a long-time Democrat, but for mm-hmm. some things he's and he has been writing, and it's like, I am not.
Right.
Don't send me that stuff.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting tidbit of information. I'll have to bear that in mind when I guess I'll walk out of the polling booth and say, now get me out of the Democrat Party, you know.
And I don't know, it may not be that, but it's like you get on that list.
Yeah.
You get on the where if you vote in that primary, you're going to be, it's not necessarily a public list. Like when I get a voter list,
oh, uh-huh.
candidate,
yeah.
I have to sign that I won't sell the list and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But the party then has access to you as a voter. Now, there's no way of avoiding that
yeah.
unless you go down and request that you're
yeah.
on that. But, yeah, I agree with you. Now, Republicans, if you want to vote in a Republican primary, you have got to register 2 weeks, over 2 weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
And people running need to realize it's like also, too, the advance voting starts 2 weeks before, which is July the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. If you're going to be, if you, you know, going to be busy that day or at work, you can walk into your county courthouse or ask for an advance ballot. And people need to realize that, like I said, primaries, do matter.
That's right. And with that, thank you. And listeners, this is a true small d, Democratic Republican here you're listening to. I'm really happy to hear your voice on Radio Free Kansas. Thank you for giving us this time, Representative Otto from my hometown, Leroy, Kansas.
Pleasure.
Hold on.
Down on the farm we had a pig, J. Edgar was his name. We'd eat up all our victuals and start back up again. Just like the vacuum cleaners, they sail down in the lane. Well, that's how J. Edgar Hoover got his name. Now Mama baked a cherry pie and set it out to cool, so we'd have something good to eat when we got home from school. J. Edgar climbed up on the porch and ate up all that pie. When we got home that morning, we heard our mama cry. J. Edgar, J. Edgar, just look what you've done. You ate up the cherry pie that was for everyone. We made it through the dusters and the hoppers too. But God help us, J. Edgar, 'cause nothing's safe from him. We had an extra man named Bob, he wouldn't work a leg. He drank bad moonshine liquor and it always made him sick. We rode church on Sunday and stayed a while in town. When we reached home at supper time, poor Bob could not be found. He wasn't in the parlor and he wasn't in the lane, drinking in the pantry or sleeping in the hay. His hat was in the pig pen that he always wore. Poor Bob won't be drinking moonshine liquor anymore. J. Edgar, J. Edgar, it just don't seem fair. You ate Bob the hired man while we were at prayer. Let's say a prayer for poor old Bob and our country too. God help us, J. Edgar, nobody's safe from you.
That was Rye Quarter. Here's something for all the folks down there in Leroy and all throughout the country to fraternize this business.
I'll be on an interview.
Listeners, I've got a real treat for you.
Okay.
This is Martin Luther on the line, and he's from Leroy, Kansas. He runs Luther's. What is it? Luther Smokehouse, isn't it?
Yes, at jerkyusa.com.
Jerkyusa.com. It's a great, we stopped down there and we were sitting there. We were attending a relative's funeral in Leroy, Kansas, my hometown, I'm happy to say. And do you go by Martin or Luther?
Martin Luther is my name, y'all.
Well, Mr. Luther.
Yeah, Martin's fine.
Mr. Martin pulled out of the grill area somewhere, and the smokehouse is located right on the highway there that goes through Leroy. What's that number? I forgot. 59.
It's changed it to 58. It used to be 57.
Oh, it's 58 now. Okay, State Highway 58 runs east and west through Leroy, Kansas, and you go in there, and his smokehouse is just on the western side of the town as you pass the city limits, and on the north end of the highway. And we were sitting in there having, Martin's got all kinds of good stuff to eat there. But we were sitting there, and it was one of the funniest moments I've had in recent history in Leroy when Martin pulls out in, what is that thing called? That thing you roll around on.
Well, Segway?
Yeah, the Segway. He started riding the Segway, listeners. out into the in the dining area very slowly. He's very skillful at it, Martin. You're very skillful at that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it was hilarious. I got some of your business cards and with the hole punches out in them, and I will just leave it at that. And I took them business cards with the hole punches in them and handed them out up here in North Jefferson County, Kansas, where we broadcast from. And it was just a great time. It made my day. It was unfortunate I had to return to my old hometown to attend a funeral, but it lightened my day. And I think, you, listeners, I think you'll get that treat every time you go to the smokehouse there in Leroy. Could you tell us a little bit about your business, how long it's been in business, and where what started the idea?
Well, we started the making jerky in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into the full-time jerky business in 1980 and sold the slaughterhouse we had. And then in 1980, we built the current building that is, it was 1990, we built the current building.
Uh-huh.
That is the restaurant and store. And now we have a building that is a 7,000 square foot building right across the street from it. And that is the manufacturing facility. And we sell jerky to about 60 convenience stores, and we sell it on our internet at jerkyusa.com. And we have a lot of interesting things and videos on the website, and it also helps describe the place and everything. It's a great place to come in, and if you're really into humor, you'll see our flying manure spreader outside. The only one in Kansas. And we have a boot tree that this tree grows cowboy boots.
Oh!
But we know they're ripe now because I've seen a couple of them fell off the tree the other day. And so we have those. We have a giant rocking chair. A lot of people like to have their family sit in the chair and take pictures of them. And it'll hold a family of 10.
It's that big, huh, Martin?
It's pretty big. And we have outhouse tours.
Outhouse tours?
Yes, we have the only outhouse that I know of that has a men's on one side and women's on the other side. Two doors, of course, but there's no partition between them.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
It's exciting.
No secrets between us, is there?
Then we have a dual pendulum swing. You might have sat in it, but anyway, that's a swing where the table moves at the same time, and seats on both sides of it. And our Segway rides we give free, of course. We let anybody ride the Segway if they're anywhere from 3 years old on up, and that wants to do it, we do provide. Someone to ride with you, and so hopefully somebody will get that on the phone.
Hey, well, now it's jerkyusa.com,
mm-hmm.
And I think you have a toll-free number. You can call in orders, isn't it, don't
yes.
you? What is
yes.
that number?
You could order on our website also,
uh-huh.
And the number is 800-322-0868, and it's... right in the middle of nowhere, Leroy, Kansas is.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a great bike ride. We have a lot of motorcycles come down here and
mm-hmm.
ride through Coffee County, blacktop roads, and they're not heavily traveled. And we have a lot of people just come down here in their cars, of course, to enjoy the different atmosphere.
Yes, it is. And it's actually, listeners, it's a great tour. You can do the Sahoji Hill Range on the south side of Highway 58 as you're driving into Leroy. The Neosho River, the mighty Neosho River, flows through there. And there's plenty of beautiful hills and countryside with lots of trees around Leroy, Kansas. And don't forget the old ghost town of Neosho Falls, just southeast of there, a great place that has RV hookups and a waterfall, a very large waterfall by Kansas standards. It's actually a wonderful place to tour. I'm glad we had this time, Martin, to visit. I'll make sure our listeners hear this throughout the spring and into the summer. Hold on, please.
Yes.
There you go. That was
Martin Luther, jerkyusa.com. Good jerky, best I've ever tasted. We're going to play a little Eddie Glenn, a tune called Mr. President, Pull My Finger.
President, pull my finger, pull it straight off of my hand. It's the only piece you wanted off this patriotic man. Super glue my severed finger to the trigger of your gun. Point it at whoever you want, but I ain't killing anyone. Hey, I got grass out in the garden, I got cows out in the field. I ain't got the time or patience to protect your business deal. Don't try to tell me you're a cowboy, cause you hang out down in Texas. Everybody knows your folks are a bunch of East Coast candy asses. Mr. President, pull my finger, pull it straight off of my hand. It's the only piece you wanted off this patriotic man. Lay the wire myself. Find the books on tape, version of the Constitution. You know why I think it's time for another revolution. Your war on terror, just a scare. Your war on drugs, just a joke. Your daddy ran the CIA while you were busy snorting coke. Mr. President, pull my finger, pull it straight off of my hand. It's the only piece you wanted off this patriotic man. Duct tape my severed finger to the trigger of your gun. Point it at whoever you want, I ain't killing anyone. Your daddy killed in Nicaragua, Panama, and El Salvador, Angola, Chile, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq, and East Timor. Now you want some blood in Baghdad and pipelines in Afghanistan. This blood that's spurting out my finger is all I want on my own hands. Mr. President, pull my finger, pull it straight off of my head. It's the only piece you wanted off this patriotic man. Super glue my severed finger to the trigger of your gun. Point it at whoever you want, but I ain't killing.
There you go. That was Eddie Glenn, one of his tunes. Eddie's a local artist here in the state of Kansas, I believe from the Lawrence area. And that was Mr. President, Pull My Finger. We're going to play something from Bloodshot Records. It's a little tune from the Bottle Rockets. It's called Get on the Bus.
Another long day's work is through. Still one thing I got to do. Got to get on.
Anybody wants to call in after Kevin's interview, it's 646-716-8652. And we'll take calls after the interview with Kevin.
Listeners, you know, you've heard it. You've seen it all throughout the state of Kansas here on this special Independence Holiday broadcast of Radio Free Kansas. You've heard the previous two guests talk, 9th District Representative Bill Otto down from the Neosho River Valley in southeast Kansas, as well as State Senator Chris Steiniger, northeast Kansas, up in Wyandotte. You've heard them both. They were talking earlier. You even heard earlier where a disparaging, perhaps sarcastic remark by Representative Otto, where he stated quite simply, if someone makes more than $250,000 a year, it doesn't matter which party, political party in the state of Kansas, you can run either one of them as a machine. And you've heard about the hit jobs being done at Senator Steiniger and his campaign for Secretary of State. And you've been listening to the state media, the media here in the state of Kansas, reading it in the newspapers, cutbacks here, our friends and relatives, some of them people in the educational, you know, teachers, janitors, custodians, groundskeepers being laid off, sports programs being curtailed, school administrators being shuffled around from different places, taking cuts in pay, teachers bracing themselves for no raises. Your neighbors in there, you've heard us read in the previous year, previous to this Independence Day, read the names of the law firms coming in to foreclose on our neighbors' homes, and over hundreds of them, just alone here in Jefferson County, sparsely populated Jefferson County, Kansas. Our neighbors, some of them losing their small farms, their country homes. You've heard it. The credit card lawsuits, the lawyers handling the credit card lawsuits for the county, the sheriff's deputies coming around serving papers to people. You've maybe seen some of it, felt a smite of that. It's something, isn't it, the times we're living in? Is it? Or is there something else going on here that we're missing? Earlier today, earlier this week, I was checking my email, watching what's going on, and I came across a really powerful statement offered by Prosperity Agenda Executive Director for it, Kevin B. Zees, that's Z-E-E-S-E, Executive Director for Prosperity Agenda. Now, I know many of you, people who are Tea Party sympathizers here in Kansas, I've heard of Americans for Prosperity. And I think they have a sister group here, Kansas for Prosperity. Those organizations largely are funded by the Koch family oil empire, located headquarters in Wichita, Kansas, and other top financiers of the conservative flank of our body of politics. Today, Kevin B. Zees is going to offer you something interesting. I read it. It was testimony he gave before the Fiscal Commission, and it was broadcast White House live. Welcome to Radio Free Kansas. First time visitor, hopefully a frequent guest to Radio Free Kansas and to your ears, Kevin B. Zees. Hello, Mr. Zees.
Thanks for having me on.
Mr. Zees, this testimony you offered, could you first tell us what is the Fiscal Commission? I probably should have asked them, but could you help me out? What is the Fiscal Commission?
A commission appointed by President Obama, created by a executive order called the National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. Originally, there was a plan to have this created by the Congress, but the Republicans decided not to support it, even those who had co-sponsored legislation, once President Obama supported it. So President Obama had to go ahead on his own and appoint this commission. And he created a commission that is really able to deal with a wide range of issues. Really could do fantastic work if it did this in a truly independent way. But the people he put on the commission really are people who have a long history of focusing on cutting things like Social Security and Medicare, and not really facing up to the real problems that the country faces and real causes of our deficit. So I was one of many people who testified before the commission, and I tried to focus their attention on what I think are the real solutions to our deficit problems.
Well, I hope this amplifies your testimony, because the body of your testimony is offered on your webpage. That's at prosperityagenda.us. That's where you need to go to read the full text of this very powerful, very meticulously well done. I mean this, Mr. Zees, this is very well researched. This is couldn't be anything more than a real, in a way, a factually based, fact-filled Declaration of Independence for the American people and how we run our government, how we're funding it, and everything. It was inspiring to read this at such a time when so many Kansans are being convinced that we've got to go through this incredibly bad time ahead of us.
Yeah, so this is a challenging time, and I think independence is a good word. I see as our solution to the challenge we face with our dysfunctional government is the word independence. We need to have an independent political movement that's not tied to either of the two political parties in power, because those powers are tied to really concentrated corporate powers that are not good for small, medium-sized businesses and certainly not good for the people. And then we also need to have independent political movements, electoral movements, that will challenge these parties in general elections outside of the two-party system. And then third, we need to have an independent media, because the media is also concentrated and does not present the wide range of views that are out there. So my hope is that on this independence day, people will declare their independence on both media, politics, and electoral decisions.
Could I quote you a little bit here from your testimony?
Sure.
Yeah, this is an interesting paragraph. It's one of the interesting. Before considering cuts to Social Security and Medicare, Mr. Zees writes in his testimony before the commission, the country's most important social programs that every American will rely on for their health and well-being, this commission should focus on where wealth is concentrated, as well as cuts in the discretionary spending. To do so means confronting the true sources of our U.S. debt. Now, listeners, listen in. You know this is what's... Many of you voted for Bush, not once but twice. Many of you have been involved deeply into the Kansas Republican Party. Please listen to this part. We have to face up to this. To do so, back to quoting Mr. Zeese, to do so means confronting the true sources of our U.S. debt. Two wars on borrowed money, uncontrolled military spending, hundreds of billions in corporate welfare. That's right, folks, welfare, corporate welfare. Tax cuts for the wealthiest and corporations, as well as deregulation of banks that led to the financial collapse that destroyed vast wealth and required massive bailouts. I got a call from a school teacher just a few weeks ago telling me that her mother died. She went through a divorce. She's over 60 years old, and she lost over $96,000 of her teacher's retirement fund. This is hardship, Mr. Zeese. This is this powerful testimony you're offered is something that people must listen to. In Kansas, help me out.
Well, you know, I'm glad you hit that power, because I think that really does make the point. We've had in this country, really for the last three decades, policies that have funneled wealth to the top. The wealth divide in our country now is the widest it's been in almost 100 years. The top 1% of the wealthiest Americans now have 70% of the wealth of the country. And that's not because they're smarter or work harder. It's because of crony capitalism. Capitalism, for those who donate to the two status quo parties, capitalism that's rigged so that small businesses and medium-sized businesses can't compete with those with political connections. And it's come as a result of tax policies that resulted in the last expansion of the country, the top 1%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, captured two-thirds of the income. And so the balanced budget, we need to go to those who benefited from that government largesse. You know, we have to go to the people who profited from the taxpayer, their tax breaks, the tax subsidies, the corporate welfare. The tax cuts that were put into place by President Bush that really were not tax cuts for, you know, most people, but
right.
They were tax cuts for the wealthiest. They resulted in $700 billion of additional debt, and it resulted in money going to the top. You know, we have in this country 7,500 households that have $20 million in income each year, 7,500 households. In the last 2.5 decades, this is the group that profited from these tax breaks. You know, in fact, you look at the top earners in the United States, the top 400 wealthiest people. They have seen their actual income tax paid drop. In 1955, it was 51.2% of the income was taxed, down to, in 2007, 16.6%. So their income dropped from, the tax dropped from 51% to 16% for these top 400. This occurred at a time when most Americans, since 1973, in fact, most Americans have not seen an increase in their salary. We've been surviving based on credit card debt. Both adults in the family working, and borrowing money, and we've not survived by any other way. If we were to start to tax these wealthiest, if we put went back to 1955 and put a 50% annual tax on those who made $5 million.
Uh-huh.
That's a pretty small group of people. And then if you went even higher for those who were making $10 million, a 70% tax. I mean, you remember back in the 1950s, the tax rate was 91%, the income tax rate. So these are low numbers historically for these wealthiest people. Those kinds of taxes that would affect a small number of Americans would raise $105
billion. $105
billion.
By
taxing those who are making $5 million and $10 million a year. That's a small group of people, a very rarefied group who are making their money because of essentially class warfare by the wealthiest, essentially because of their connections to political figures. They've gotten these incredible tax breaks, and now it's time to take that money back. And returning back to the 1950s tax levels, even less than those, we would raise $105 billion.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Mr. Zeese, but you raised a very important question. You brought up the graven image of President Theodore Roosevelt, and you urged Congress to address, I'm going to quote here, the concentration of wealth by instituting a, quote, graduated inheritance tax. Now, getting off the script here a little bit, but many of the local farmers and stuff go on, and they're all Republicans. They're 90% Republicans out in Jefferson County, Kansas, and
Sure.
And they're all saying that's an example of the state tax cut that was initiated, I believe, at least as a campaign slogan back during the Reagan days, and it still goes on and on for the last 30 years. They use that as an example of helping the small farmer who owns a lot of cropland. But it's nothing really. I don't think it has anything to do with them, frankly.
It has nothing to do with that at all. In fact, you know, the failure to collect, you know, estate taxes on the wealthiest has cost us about $15 million a year in revenue losses. And there's a bill that's been introduced, would bring back, it's called the Responsible Estate Tax Act, and it exempts 99.75% of Americans. So these family farms,
mm-hmm.
in fact, there's specific exemptions for family farms, but these farms would not be threatened by this. It would protect those people. It would focus on, again, the wealthiest Americans, you know, people who have, more than $3.5 million in their estate, you know,
mm-hmm.
for individuals and $7 million for couples. It would really impact a small percentage of people, but it would raise $15 billion a year, and it would start to do what we need to do, which is to bring back the middle class so that we don't have this gigantic wealth divide, you know, with CEOs making hundreds of times the amount of the average worker and then paying much lower percentage of their taxes, of their income in taxes. And so this kind of an estate tax would be the kind of thing that would begin to start to bring us back to some common sense in budgeting. And it's not the only thing we can do. There's a lot of other things we can do. Let me give you some examples.
Yeah, sure.
And that can help to move us in that direction. You know, the other one that is so obvious, and that really, if it's not in the commission's report, it just shows you what a fraud of a commission it is to, you know, we saw in this most recent financial collapse how Wall Street had become a gambling casino. How the banks, because of the deregulation of banks, allowed banks to invest money, like a Wall Street trader would. That helped to lead to the collapse. This kind of investment caused the problem. So people are suggesting, and this has now been suggested by 200 economists, by the way, including Nobel Prize winners, they suggested a financial transaction tax. And a financial transaction tax would be a small tax on each purchase of stock and each purchase of derivatives and options. On stock, they're recommending a 0.5% tax. Not 5%, but 0.5%. So less than 1% tax on stock trades. And on derivatives and options and credit default swaps, which are a big problem, they're recommending an even smaller tax, 0.02%. Those tiny taxes would raise $150 billion a year.
Hmm.
Now, think about what $150 billion a year means. The income tax on the first $100,000 that people are earning raises about $400 billion a year. And so we raise more than one-fourth of what we raise on income taxes by this tiny, minute tax. And the nice thing about this tax is it would also slow speculation. Slow the casino gambling. In fact, it would lead investors to invest longer term
uh-huh.
in the economy so we can actually build an economy rather than investors going in, buying something short term, next day selling it, buying something short term, next day selling it. And that kind of speculation is what helped lead to this collapse. And so a tiny tax like that of 0.5% on stock, 0.02% on derivatives and options would raise $150 billion. Britain has a tax like this.
Oh, they do.
On stocks.
Oh, I didn't know.
On stocks.
Uh-huh.
And Britain's, of course, much tinier than the United States.
Yeah.
It's the size of one state. They're raising $40 billion a year just by taxing stock trades. And so this is not some crazy idea that's way out there that's never been tried before.
Right.
It's an idea that actually works. And so we can, again, start to pull back the wealth divide by starting to tax work less and capital more.
Right.
So people who work and for these small salaries, and the average American couple makes $50,000 median income,
yeah.
and the average individual about $35,000. You know, these small salaries, these small incomes, getting taxed at 15 to 25%. Rather than doing that, we can start to shrink the wealth divide by focusing on taxing wealth more and work less.
Well, that is what I've been wanting to hear. And it extremely, you know, this is what one of the things that really bothers me about the very strong libertarian influences within the Tea Party movement here. We've been grappling, struggling with what is it with the Tea Party that we find the anger we tend to agree with. Many of the people are my callers and listeners, readers. They're angry. They're angry, and they should be angry. And we're trying to figure. We are trying. I'm including myself, trying to figure out if we're just getting fleeced. Who's doing the fleecing and all these golden parachutes that these CEOs are getting. And even here in the state of Kansas, we just get this creepy feeling that they're causing massive suffering among the great numbers of our population, the working people. And instead of figuring out ways of lending comfort and cure to the people who are at the bottom or the ones that are having extremely hard times, they're either running away or they're just telling us you got to give it up and pay more taxes. And that they make it an either or thing. And you raise this thing about these corporate. They give tax abatements. The state of Kansas gives tax abatements to.
Sure. This kind of corporate wealth happens federally, state, and local. Let me just say this about the Tea Party before we get to that.
Mm.
You know, I share their anger. We are.
Right.
The government is fleecing us. And I think what needs to be understood is that the problem in government is it's controlled by the economic elite. It's controlled by the people who donate to campaigns. When you're talking about spending $1 billion on a presidential campaign, like we did in the last election, that money doesn't come from working people. President Obama, who was painted as this image of getting elected by small donations, in fact got large amounts from the health insurance industry.
Uh-huh.
He paid them back. He paid them back with a health care bill that essentially gives $400 billion a year into the insurance industry through taxpayer subsidies and by forcing people to buy these corrupt insurance policies. We see it in his donations from the nuclear industry, and he's giving tens of billions of dollars in loan guarantees to the nuclear industry. And he has to do that, by the way, because Wall Street refuses to invest in nuclear energy. Why? Because it's so risky, so slow. The nuclear industry would not advance unless taxpayers funded it. And so now what that means is taxpayers fund it, but then the profits all get funneled to the owners. And if there's any, the other thing the taxpayers do is they pay the insurance. They guarantee if there's any damages that the insurance the taxpayers pay for. So we get to take the risk. Put up the initial capital or guarantee the initial capital, and then the owners, the top 0.5% in our country, get to take the profit.
Right.
And that is what should outrage people in the Tea Party, is the crony capitalism that is rampant throughout. You see it in
well, it's country. Endless, and these endless wars and this exponentially growing, telescoping growth of what President Dwight Eisenhower, Republican folks, said, called the military-industrial complex. It just keeps growing and growing, and many of our young
military makes up half of U.S. discretionary spending. So if you want to talk about fiscal responsibility,
yeah.
Go to where the money is. That's half of federal discretionary spending. So the military is growing and growing. This weapons and war budget we have is bigger than the whole world combined. We spend more. The United States spends more on weapons and war than the whole world combined. And what's truly a great example of fiscal irresponsibility is what the GAO found. They found that looking at 95 weapon systems, they found $300 billion in cost overruns. In other words, the corporation said, we'll create this weapon for X price, and instead they created it for Y price, and it adds up to $300 billion more. We just cut and said, we are not going to fund you can't come in with a low-bid contract to get the contract and then, spend more than you promised and expect us to cover it. No, that's not going to happen. And so if you change the DOD, weapons procurement program so you couldn't allow that, that alone would be a gigantic saving of $300 billion. And so getting control, and that's fiscal responsibility. And talking about fiscal responsibility more with the weapons and war budget, the Department of Defense over and over again as well as the war in Iraq, has been unauditable. Auditors have tried to audit the DOD, tried to audit the Iraq war, and because of it's so, you know, intentionally complex and messy, it's unauditable. How can we fund, put half of our discretionary spending into budgets that are unauditable? That is fiscal responsibility. Whether you support the military, you know,
right,
or not, whether you think we need to have a military that's much bigger than a defensive military, but becomes an offensive one, whether you think that is true or not, we still need to have a budget that is responsible, and we don't have that economic budget.
Well, I want to run this by you, because it's got to come down home. It's got to come right down here to ground level for Kansas out here. It doesn't soak in, and Mr. C, it soaks into me, but I've got to get it. I've got to impart this on Independence Day, holiday 2010. I've got to give this. You know, a tiny minority, 20 and 30 somethings at work, a tiny percentage of who are union workers, but these are out here in Kansas, so they're working. They're one, two paychecks away or a bad divorce away from losing their jobs or getting into such hardship where maybe they're skilled workers and they're making $15, $20 an hour, and they're facing the $7.15 an hour, $8.15 an hour. You can't go up to the county courthouse in Jefferson County and say tell the county clerk and her two assistants that they're superfluous, they're not necessary, that we need a smaller government. You know, there is something about public service that is a redeeming characteristic about our country, and that's who I feel are the people that are most scared: the teachers, the little clerks in the courthouse, the beat cop out here for the county sheriff's department. They're the ones worried about cutbacks, and then there's us out here in our jobs. Constantly, this is serious business, Mr. Zeiss. This is really serious business out here in Jefferson County, and it's the chickens have come home to roost, so to say. They really have, and it's, you know, what I'm trying to say is, I talked to some of these people out here, and they some of the more not the ones that are in the crosshairs of the cutbacks, the a little more comfortable. They say things like, well, this is all about personal responsibility. We need to cut welfare. Social Security, there, you know, is going to go broke within any year now. It's going to go broke. We should privatize it and let people invest the money as
they
choose.
Can you imagine if we had privatized Social Security and this economic collapse happened? You would literally have senior citizens eating cat food. Because, I mean, already Social Security, the average Social Security payment that Americans receive is $14,000 a year. Women, average payment is $11,000 a year. I mean, there's nowhere to cut there. I mean, you can't afford rent and food on that kind of income. And what's happened, unfortunately, in our retirement is it's changed. Rather than people saving money as they used to, because of no increase in middle class wages, they've had to borrow money. So people are in debt rather than having savings. We've lost the pensions. There's no, you know, people don't have pensions anymore like they used to when my parents were teachers and nurses. And so it used to be a three-legged stool.
Yes.
Pensions, savings, and Social Security. And now what we have is Social Security, debt, and no pensions. And so people really need Social Security. There's no room to cut there. And the reality is this Social Security is a contract made between the working people and the government. And the contract is we require you to take a certain amount of money in your FICA taxes and give it into the Social Security Trust Fund. The reality is that trust fund has a surplus of $2.5 billion right now.
Yeah, this is a striking fact that you cited in your testimony, that there's some sort of smoke and mirrors going on here.
There is. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors because, and then, by the way, that surplus rises to $4.3 trillion by 2023. These are not my numbers. These are the Social Security Trust Fund auditors put these numbers out. And, you know, what really is happening here is Wall Street wants control of this money. They want this big bunch of money we're forced to put into the retirement so they can invest it in casino gambling away. You know, so this fund is funded through till 2043. And, you know, there's a cap on who pays in the Social Security. Right now it's $106,000. Above that, you don't pay. You're making $10 million a year. You pay the same amount of taxes as somebody on Social Security taxes, only $106,000 a year.
Wow.
If you just raise that level for the wealthiest Americans. You can even, for the 100,000 or 200,000, not raise it there, but raise it above 250. If you raise that level of tax so that those people pay their share of tax into the Social Security Fund, we would have a fund that's not only in surplus, but massively in surplus for as far as we can see forward. We would be able to raise the amount of money that Social Security, that our senior citizens receive.
Well,
and so that is the direction we need to be thinking about going, is how we revamp our retirement system so people aren't retired in poverty.
You know, I get this feeling, you know, the people out here, we've got wind is big out here. People want solar. We've got the sun. We've got the wind. But, you know, people can't get the – they got to go to the bank, and they're already mortgaged. They got to go to the bank. There's no help on this at this point. This is just a horrible – there's only one set of electric wind turbines, and there are two of them over here less than 6 miles from me. The electric utility company still owned – you know, largely only a few electric cooperatives exist out here, and they're constantly under fire. But the large utility companies, they offer that. And there's just no, you know, we see people out here, we have barbecues, campfire talks about how all of us have small 10-acre farms and stuff, that we could put wind generators up, put into the grid. And it took us five years through the state legislature just to get the largest power utilities to concede to allow us to do that, and now we're at the point where, frankly, subjectively, generally, so goddamn broke, we can't afford to put the wind turbines up to cut down our electric. You know, it's a mess.
And instead of what the federal government is doing, this is what we're talking about, a little corporate welfare here.
Yeah.
What the federal government is doing instead is putting the money into the oil and gas industry. You know, these industries that have seen record profits are getting $33 billion in handouts over the next 5 years. And if instead we cut that, that corporate welfare, and redirected our money toward a clean, sustainable energy, we would really begin to see the kinds of things you're talking about. And what I want to see happen with that is corporate welfare needs to be changed. It needs to be changed to be considered taxpayer investment. And so taxpayers are investing in wind and solar and the new energy economy, in mass transit and clean cars. All that goes into the new energy economy. And that investment should mean that we get a percentage of the profits. The money that gets given by taxpayers should not go to the top 5.5%. It should be going to everybody. And this has been going on, by the way, in Alaska since 1979. They passed an initiative in Alaska in 1979 that said that if the oil and gas industry goes into the Alaska lands and profits from Alaska's natural resources, that a percentage of that profit gets shared with all Alaskans. And so they set up a trust fund where the money gets put in, it gets invested, and every year, every Alaskan gets a check from that trust fund. And that check is about $2,000 to $3,000 per person. So a family of five gets $10,000 to $15,000, you know, annually because of their share of the profit. Can you imagine if we now are at this brink of a new energy economy that's going to be massive? It's going to be the future of our economy.
Well, we want it to be, Mr. Zeese.
It's going to be. And if we start to transform corporate welfare into taxpayer investment in the new energy economy so everybody profits from it, it'll be popular, it'll shrink the wealth divide, and stop throwing money at the top. And that's what we need to do.
Man.
We have an economy that works, a middle class that works, a middle class that thrives to deal with the retirement. But imagine the retirement problem. You know, if you're getting $11,000 a year from Social Security and you get a $3,000 check from your share of investing in the future, it just adds to your retirement. It just makes things more workable.
Well, we're familiar with cooperative movements. They seem to have lost their meaning after the 1880s. They grew in power and power and power up to the 1950s, and then they just were decimated. Co-ops. We still have electric co-ops. We have small farmer co-ops. We certainly have food co-ops in the Merck and the Merck folks, listeners, you've all heard of the Merck Mercantile Co-op down in Lawrence, Kansas. This is really serious business, and we're approaching a time now where we've got to make these tough decisions about: do we go through the cuts? Do we suffer them, or do we start saying something and doing something? Can help us out.
This is the time for people to start to demand that the economy work for them and not for the top 0.5%. You know, these phony front groups that groups like Koch Industries set up,
yeah,
designed to continue status quo, to continue to funnel money to the wealthiest and take money from the middle class. We need to reverse that. We need to come. That's what ProsperityAgenda.us, my organization, is trying to do, is to build a movement that will stand for real reform, real change, paradigm-shifting change, so we can democratize the economy, make it one where we all benefit from it in ways that are fair, and make it one where people have control of their economic futures. That's what we need to start to develop. And right now we're developing instead an economy that just benefits the top 5.5%, you know, the top 1% to the top 0.5%, rather than the rest of us who are really making the economy work.
How can we, listeners, get involved? And yes, we'll do the internet. We want to sign up. I think people should sign up to get your newsletter, Prosperity Agenda. Now, folks, that's prosperityagenda.us. But, you know, beyond that, what I mean, we've got.
Well, this is going to be, if you join us at prosperityagenda.us, we continuously urge people to take action,
uh-huh.
whether it's web-based or locally, you know, outside, you know, doing various events.
Right.
And so there's many ways for people to get involved, and that's what it's going to take. It's that always has taken this. It's always take, because we've had this constant problem throughout our history of concentrated wealth and their desires versus the people's necessities. And the only times that we've succeeded in the past in getting a fairer shake, you know, getting the 40-hour work week, ending child labor, getting women the right to vote, you know, all these kinds of, you know, protecting farmers who are going bankrupt. The only times we've succeeded in the past is when people got organized and were persistent in making demands on the government. Because you know that the economic elite and the corporations who are profiting from the crony capitalism, they are organized and persistent. They are out there every day. $1 billion was spent in the first quarter of this year lobbying Congress by business interests. So the money is flowing into Washington. We can beat the money because, in the end, the votes do matter. We can beat the money. We have the organized, persistent, and unwavering in our demands. And that's the kind of movement that ProsperityAgenda.us is trying to develop, and I hope that your listeners will come and get involved. We've worked on every issue from health care to banking regulation to the energy economy, you know, to stopping business interests from their abusive lobbying techniques. We are working on all these issues, and the more people we get involved, the more success we'll have.
That's right, and I happen to know for a fact, as for full disclosure purposes, I'm the member of the board of the Kansas Progressive Caucus for the 2nd Congressional District, and I happen to know that the current candidate fielded by the Democratic Party, although not necessarily, well, let's leave it at that, the current candidate for governor of Kansas, Tom Holland of the Democratic Party, has refused the endorsement of the Chamber of Commerce in Kansas.
Good for him.
Refused it. He does not want to be endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce. Now, I'm not saying Tom Holland, this is not an endorsement. Put him up against the wall, folks. Ask him the hard questions. Let's get to the bottom. Who's got the wealth? And how are they going to give it up? Because they haven't been giving it up, folks. The last 30 years, it's been nothing but free market conservatism here in the state of Kansas. We're facing a huge problem. And thank you, Mr. Zeese, for taking your time off before the holiday to give us this message. And please, listeners, check out his testimony before the Fiscal Commission. It's really succinct. It's to the point. It's factually based. It's common sense stuff. Mr. Zeese, thank you on this 4th of July weekend.
Well, thanks for having me on. I hope people will declare their independence and start to fight for their rights like our founders did when the economic leader of that era, you know, took advantage of them. It's time for us to stand up as well.
That's right. ProsperityAgenda.us, Executive Director Kevin Zeese. Hold on just a minute, Kevin.
Well, that was the interview with Kevin Zeese, and we're replacing Jim Hightower now. And this is sort of a pretty interesting a two-part segment, but here we go with the first part of Jim Hightower.
I'll tell you about the touching compassion of a bleeding heart right-winger today on Hightower Radio. John Kyle is a bleeding heart conservative. Does he bleed for the downtrodden? Or, as Jesus put it, for the least of these? No, no. Kyle's heart bleeds for those with the most. The right-wing Arizona senator practically weeps for the wealthiest 0.2% of American families that have estates worth from $1 million to $5 million. What causes Kyle's eyes to brim with tears is that these privileged ones will have to pay an estate tax on wealth above $1 million unless Congress exempts them from the oppressive burden of helping to shoulder the cost of America's highways, parks, schools, military, water purity, and other public services we all count on. I'm sure that the other 99.8% of us share their pain and appreciate the Republican Senate leader's deep empathy for multimillionaires. How deeply is he touched? Earlier this year, Kyle tried to scuttle an extension of benefits for America's rising tide of unemployed workers, demanding that his favored constituency of super-rich families first be given hundreds of billions of dollars in estate tax cuts. He failed in this mission of mercy for millionaires, but he recently came right back with an amendment to derail a proposal to help America's hard-hit small businesses get desperately needed loans. Forget Main Street, wailed the senator from Easy Street, unless and until we exempt estates worth up to $5 million from the tragedy of taxation. How much would Kyle's tax cut for the elites take from America's public treasury? More than $80 billion a year, which is what the 2009 estate tax on these rich ones brought in. But hey, says the jovial plutocrat, we can make that up by slashing programs that benefit the middle class and the poor. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, it's just a matter of getting your priorities straight. Guys like Kyle profess their love for small business, but they always stay true to the rich. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
There you go. That was Jim Hightower. We'll play a few tunes here since the switchboard rolls back up to me. There we go. Gonna play some. Day like today, I think a little bit more Frankie's is up to for late afternoon like today. Out here, here's one. It's from Frankie. It's called This is a Frankie Cross. It's a big rock candy mountain.
Good evening, class. Tonight's subject comes from a time in American history that scarcely resembles our own. See, among other things, the weather was acting real funny. It hurt the crops. The small farmer was out on his own, not doing too well. The government was so deep in the pockets of Wall Street investment bankers that there was a housing crisis and a mass migration. Yes, a remote time indeed. But not all things are all bad or all good. And at the risk of spinning this into a didactic yarn, let us examine an anthropological subset that occurred as a result of these hard times. So now when you're farming on your share and you lose everything you got, and all you have is your two shoes, if you're lucky pants and a shirt, the banker didn't ask you to take it off your back as you were walking out the door. Well, then you had to improvise. Find new means of public transportation. And that's just what the hobo did. Short footnote here. To find out about the hobo's rail riding lives, it's good to consult Professor Woody Guthrie. Song Hobo's Lullaby. If you need further instruction on just what a hobo is, their sorts and condition, consult your IWW glossary. I'll give you time. It's right next to Das Kapital. Top shelf. All right. Now, these hobos weren't just rail riding, thieving ne'er-do-wells. Not all of them, at least. And within this culture, they built a system of language, code of ethics and honor, even a hieroglyphic system of writing. Why, to this day, if you live in an older house somewhere in Middle America, somewhere between Oklahoma and California, you can probably go out and look out on the fence post, find out how the previous owner treated people, whether he was a good Christian, an honest man, a plain dealer. Subject of tonight's song. It comes out of the Hobo Hymnal, page 39.
Praise Lord.
Given the way things are going, I think we could all use a little old-time religion now, Dennis. Some might stipulate that the place I'm going to sing about right now actually exists. About 6 miles due west of Cimarron, New Mexico. I don't know all about that. They wouldn't let me in because the Boy Scouts of America own it. But I'll keep looking. And one evening as the sun went down, the jungle fire was burning. Down the track came a hobo hiking. He said, "Boys, I ain't turning. I'm headed for the land far away beyond the crystal fountains. So come with me and we'll go see Big Rock Candy Mountain. Big Rock Candy Mountain. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain is a land that's bare and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night, where the boxcars are all empty and the sun shines every day on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees and the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, all the cops have wooden legs and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth and a hen lays soft boiled eggs. Farmer's trees are full of fruit and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall and the wind don't blow in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, you never change your socks and little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, all the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in.
short hand shovels, no axes, saws or picks. Why am I going away, where you sleep all day, where they hung the jerk that had been at work? I'll see y'all next coming fall in the big rock candy mountains.
You're a Grand Old Rag, sung by Billy Murray, Edison Records. There's a feeling, comes a feeling, and it sets my brain a-reeling when I'm listening to the music of a military band. Any tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand. Way down south in the land of cotton, melody untiring, ain't that inspiring? Hurrah, hurrah, we'll join the jubilee, and that's going some for the Yankees by gum. Red, white, and blue, I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old rag. You're a grand old rag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old rag. You're a grand old rag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old rag.
Well, there he was, Billy Murray, with the grand old rag. But this is your co-host, Matthew, Brother Matthew, bidding everyone a happy and very safe 4th of July and the celebrations of our Independence Day. And I hope everyone's feeling independent. And we're going to close it out with our usual closing song, the Missouri Dog song. And once again, everybody have a good 4th of July weekend. We'll see you on Monday night. We'll be back on air.
Thank you. must naturally follow us as we drift past Sam Johnson's store, past the Apskim of the door. When Jim, he stops to smell a box, they shied at him a bunch of rocks. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Makes no difference if he is the town, they gotta quit kicking my dog around. They tied a tin can to his tail and run him past the county jail. And that plum naturally makes me sore, and Lem he cussed and Bill he swore. Me, Lem Briggs and old Bill Brown, we lost no time in a jumping down, and we wiped them ducks up on the ground for kicking my old dog around. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Makes no difference if he is a hound, they gotta quit kicking my dog around. Folks say a dog can't hold no grudge, but once when I got too much fudge, them town ducks tried to do me up, but they didn't count on old Jim Pup. Jim seed his duty far and thin, and he licked into them gentlemen, and he sure bust up the coat house squaw with rags and meat and hide and haw. Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. Makes no difference if he is the hound, they gotta quit kicking my dog around.
Happy 4th of July, everyone. We'll see you Monday night again on Radio Free Kansas. This is your co-host, Brother Matt, signing out.